Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Three Donkeys podcast. My name is Tyler Bielman. I'm here with Scaff Elias.
Hello.
And Richard Garfield.
Hi.
And ordinarily, we want to open these podcasts up with industry news or interesting product releases, but unfortunately, there is no news.
No news is good news.
Yeah, especially for Upper Deck.
That's right. So we're going to get right into our topic for today, which is variation of setup in games. And, you know, we've been talking a little bit about, you know, how games extend over time and have replayability. And one of the things we've landed on is the variation in setup seems to have a really big impact on that. And we talked in, you know, a very accessible German style game that a lot of people enjoy is Settlers of Catan. And there's definitely some variation in setup in Settlers.
Yeah, I think that probably helps it a little bit, especially the first couple times people play the game, it feels like it's different.
Yeah, it's actually different than most of the Euro games. It's a Euro game quality in general that there's not all that much luck and that there's not that much variation in setup. Of course, there's a wide variety of Euro games, but that characterizes a lot of them. Settlers of Catan, what I believe is the most successful of the Euro games, is different in both those regards.
And so, how does that compare or contrast to the setup in other games that might be a little more detailed or have a little more depth to them?
I don't know. Don't know how many people have played games like Cosmic Encounter, but Cosmic Encounter Richard introduced to me in many, many years ago, and that was one of the first games that really that I played that really felt extremely different from time to time. So it had a built-in replayability.
Can you go into quickly the basics of Cosmic for people who
might not play it? Cosmic was for me an inspirational game. It was a really interesting concept. When you play Cosmic, it's got this vanilla set of rules, but everybody is allowed to break the rules in one way. That's your alien power. And each time you get one alien power, or if you like the hot dog, you guys can get more than one alien power. But the first time I played it, it was a pretty good game. The second time I played it, I sort of raised my eyebrows. It was completely different than the first time. And the third time I played it, it was like a different game again. And it really kind of woke me up.
I have not, sadly, I haven't played Cosmic, or I haven't played in a long time, but what I have played a lot recently is Dominion, and there's clearly some interesting setup things that happen with Dominion.
Before talking about Dominion, I would like to mention there was actually just a new version of Cosmic just came out. I think it's Fantasy Flight. Company that's published Cosmic in the past has had real serious financial difficulties, so I wish them well. But I think their version looks really good.
I have the Avalon Hill Hasbro version in my closet.
Yeah, and I think, wasn't theirs published before Avalon Hill went bankrupt?
No, we did it at Wizards.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe we're an exception. Yeah.
So we're rolling on the board game.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wizards now after Cosmic, right?
Was there anything else you want to say about Cosmic in terms of how the setup impacts that, or did you cover that?
I think I covered that. Dominion is certainly... there's been a series of games which has culminated right now in Dominion, which exemplifies this variety in setup. In Dominion, every game you flip up a certain number of cards. In the basic set, it's 10 cards out of 25, and that's what you play with for the game. And so this gives you an enormous variety in setup, and each different combination of cards will lead to different play among the players.
And for a more old school person like me, I think as we'd been talking about this, I realized that this was one of the things that attracted to me about all the miniatures, historical miniatures, and hex military map games that I used to play back a zillion years ago, where those games play very differently on. You know, based upon the initial setup.
So describe an initial setup in one of those games.
Well, if the idea as historical simulations for most of them is that you're supposed to play out these old battles, but even though you have the same basic rule set, what armies and where the armies come in and what the terrain is completely different every time. And it really the strategies you have to use are thereby completely different, and those games all feel very, very different. They actually vary, tend to vary the victory conditions as well as the initial setup, and it just gives you an immense amount of variety in your play experience for having learned only one rule system.
Just jumping back to Dominion for a second, I mean I find that there are some basic strategies that seem to apply, and there, you know, you have actions and you have buys, but buys are not as good as actions, and things, those sort of meta rules of when you look and analyze the setup, the 10 cards that are out there, that you sort of apply a basic strategy to what's there. Do you find that to be the case, or do you find that your play varies wildly based on what's out there?
Well, I think the first time you play, you find that every game is very different, but as you play a number of games, you begin to determine a number of meta rules that allow you to analyze the cards that are out there a little easier, and that begins to tie the games together.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm referring to. Can you describe that a little bit more? I mean, what do you mean by the meta rule?
Oh, well, where you begin to look at the actions, for instance, and say, and one of the first things I look for is, like, are there cards which give you extra actions? Because if there are, then action cards are more valuable. If there aren't, then you shouldn't have too many in your deck. And so things like that will allow you to analyze a particular, whereas the games felt completely different before, now they're beginning to get unified by these overarching rules. But there will be weird setups where there'll be some combination you didn't recognize before, you've never seen before, and as you play, you might learn them all. I don't know, but then there are expansions in the work, and then the next set of 25 cards will just, you know, throw all that out. You'll still be able to apply a lot of those meta rules you determined before, but there'll be new combinations and new rules you have to start applying.
Yeah, and that's interesting. And with the military games, it's an old category, 300 years old or so. And I think that those meta rules from scenario to scenario are exactly, I guess, the original purpose is to teach generals really those meta rules. It's not like you're going to play a simulation in the late 1700s and have that applied directly to the battlefield. But I believe the purpose of those is to have those same meta rules, you know, carry over into real life.
Do you think that they
concentrate your power, hold back reserves, you know, respect terrain, that sort of thing?
I would expect that technology would modify those meta rules drastically. In terms of the war and the rules of engagement,
well, it depends on what, you know, what type of thing you're supposed to be simulating. Yeah. But the meta rules for any particular, you know, any particular instance of those games, you know, are presumably apply to, or the ideal for the people that created those games was to apply to the battlefield situations that correspond to them.
Yeah, I'd also like to put some context on the. Dominion, there's actually been a series of games in that market which have come out, and they've been marked by this this variation in setup, which is a little uncharacteristic in the Euro/hobby game market. The first I noticed was Reach for the Galaxy.
Race for the Galaxy.
Tom Lehman's game. And that has a lot of this characteristic of the game is radically different every time, has a radically different setup, that is. Another game which followed that was Agricola, which was described to me. It's a much longer game, but everybody's dealt a set of hands for Agricola and a set of cards, not a set of hands, one hand of cards, that is. And that really defines their game experience. It's not like they get seven cards and they draw one every turn or something like that, where you go through a whole bunch of cards. You're really defined by your cards at the beginning.
I've always heard it said Agricola, and you say Agricola. Which is correct?
I believe Agricola is, because I think it's Latin, but I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. When I first read it, I thought it was Agricola, because yeah. I thought it was some company name, but I think it's agriculture in Latin, and
Old school guy, do you know your Latin?
It's a corn-based beverage.
Aren't they all? I did want to see if we could draw a line, though, from the historical miniatures that you're talking about and war games. You could draw a straight line from those to chainmail to Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, role-playing games are great in this regard, especially we may have mentioned something like this on our last podcast, depending upon your dungeon master. Some people sit down and play a role-playing game and it plays the same way every single time because they fight a relatively boring set of monsters. But a couple things go on in role-playing games. One, you can play a different character from campaign to campaign, and that really changes your strategy, obviously. You're playing a wizard versus a warrior, and what's your role? Is it the tank or the striker? And then you have this variability, again, through setup, because the dungeon master has either created something or bought a new module or whatever, where you face the rust monster, and now your wizard has to be the tank, et cetera, et cetera. So, you really... They run the whole gamut of that experience, relying heavily upon the referee to change the setup.
But that's the setup is changed by what the referee is prepared, not by
or bought. But yeah,
right, sure. But you're not bringing new character sheets to the table every game, and that's changing the setup. The DM is throwing at you a scenario that hopefully has interesting. Elements to it that force you to play outside of your normal paradigm of play.
Sort of. I mean, a lot of people do play in multiple campaigns. They'll play several characters at the same time, or they'll switch campaigns, or how long do you play a character before you switch character? And the other nice thing about role-playing games is that when you level or purchase items, you actually have this experience of changing what your basic strategy is, even independent of the Dungeon Master.
So, I guess... There's an asymmetry there to a degree, but in a game like Magic or a trading card game, both players are bringing half of the game to the table, and so you're getting a pretty drastically different setup.
Magic sort of really pushes it to another level for relative to a lot of games that preceded it. But in Magic, each of the players chooses their entire deck of cards, all the cards they bring, and when you sit down opposite somebody else. You're sort of democratically, each of you has chosen half the game state. And the combination is something which hopefully is exciting and unexpected, and often is for beginning players at least.
And that goes up and down in Magic. Some people like to switch decks a lot, and so the changes in their game experiences vary widely based upon what they're doing, and some people play the same deck until the cards get too dog-eared to play, and you still get the variation because your opponent's decks change a lot. So you have to relearn your basic strategies from time to time as you play new opponents, and that's that can break down depending upon the environment a little bit. Sometimes in a constructed environment, you may be facing 80% one type of deck and 20% another, and that's all you'll see. But the nice thing about Magic is expansions keep coming out, and so that keeps changing.
Yeah. One player can certainly stick with one deck, and provided they alternate, vary their opponents, they can get a lot of variety just right there. And they can even just tweak the deck and make a big difference. I wanted to go back a little bit to the role-playing, just because while you all were talking, I remembered our recent campaign that we played. I actually introduced a rule for my character to increase the amount of variation per setup. I created sort of a religious order, the order of the chain, and every time I went up a level, I would make a new rule for my character. And so the first level, I wasn't allowed to talk. The second level, I always had to tell the truth. The third level, I always had to lie.
We liked the first level the best.
Yeah, I bet.
And it was sort of intentionally a way to sort of change my experience every level. And I just connected that right now to this idea of
a variation in setup.
Yeah,
and similar to. To the setup provided by opponents in Magic, it definitely changed how the rest of the party had to play. Because whether he's always lying or not talking, I think was one of the big ones. It was very interesting.
Or
even the level where he always told the truth.
Yeah.
We had to play very differently because we had to keep him away from having contact with any other people.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a great idea. I've been looking for a hook for my warlock. I might have to steal that one, Richard.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. It does work out better as a religious order. But
did you find that it changed your...
A warlock can find God.
A warlock finds a demon.
Yeah.
Did you find that your However, that you Scaff brought up this notion of basic strategy, this idea that you have a plan going in, and that adjusts. Did you find that your tactics were changing or your role playing was changing?
Both. Both, because we during the level, some of the levels would put the party at a disadvantage, and so I had to figure out how to work around my the restrictions I'd put on myself without betraying the spirit of it.
Richard's particular thing was mostly role playing that spilled over into tactics. I went ahead and added actual different variations in power associated with the role playing restrictions on each level, where, you know, maybe one level he wasn't allowed to cast a certain type of spell.
I see. So you put a mechanical piece around it.
So it was a mechanical piece, or, you know, his bluff check goes down, or he has to believe everybody, so his sense motive check goes down, or whatever. Those sorts of things where, those were changes that we added, more minor, but just with the idea of perhaps extending this system to other players, because they'll need a sort of mechanical foothold on it to make it more interesting for them.
And so I just want to circle back to this idea of your basic strategy, and like when you're playing a magic deck, you show up with your deck that has a certain way that it wants to win, and you're going to try to execute against that, and then the other player is going to be disruptive to that, and you're going to make mistakes, but maybe you're going to have to improvise something as well. How does that compare to like chess, where you have a different opening and it changes the way the game is going to play out?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think the variation that we're talking about, you could probably, in some sense, see inside, you know, chess. But it's not as obvious. What the really interesting part is changing your basic strategy, changing your autopilot as you're playing. In chess, the very most basic strategy of don't leave pieces hanging, and pieces are worth a certain point value, and that's going to carry you through, you know, 90% of your play. There's a lot of interest and innovation that's going on beyond that. That basic zero level strategy itself is what changes in a lot of these other games. So from the point of view of an expert, it's a somewhat academic question, which game has more variability. But from the point of view of a casual player playing these games a couple times, they feel really different.
Yeah, certainly for a casual player, these games are night and day. You sit down to chess and you set up the same way every time. Very, very different than Magic. You've got different decks, or a military strategy game. You've got a completely different scenario. As you become expert at the game, of course, you might discount the very start of the game and start talking about, for you, maybe the game starts a little bit into it. And then you're into this this area of high variation. So for a sophisticated player, you know, maybe it's not all that different. But for a person who plays a lot of games, it is very different.
And with Magic, this variability that you see in your autopilot, it has to change a lot. Some people get sort of larger and larger autopilots that handle more and more situations. So a very experienced Magic player is playing on automatic through a wide range, for a wide variety of the decks that he might face, say, for instance, in the average tournament. And then you get these, you know, super duper Magic players whose understanding of the game and autopilot is so good that they're able to, you know, stop playing for a year and come back in and pick up some cards and still play better than I can, because their autopilot is just a larger set of rules.
And compare that to a high level chess player.
Well, I think it's probably pretty similar, right? Where at that range, they're the sort of things they're thinking about automatically is such that it's that they're seeing these sort of very fine variations in change later into the game.
Talk to me about games you've designed that where you have thought about these ideas.
Actually, one analogy that Richard had mentioned earlier that might make sense of the chess variation in chess or Magic is golf. we're talking about games that have a lot of variability to it, and Richard said golf, and I immediately knew exactly what he was talking about, because we both unfortunately had to hang around a lot of golfers, wow, it's variable, because you know on hole three of such and such a course there's a dog leg left, isn't that amazing, or this course plays long or whatever, and those sorts of things are really to me when I'm out there, it's a attempt to hit the ball toward the flag is better than not. And it really, and the course doesn't matter. But to a more advanced player, these sort of subtle differences, I mean, they really feel an interest in the variation in these courses.
Right. And each golf course for them is like a deck in Magic or something, where it's just a completely different experience. For me, it's just the weather.
Right. Right. And the zero level strategy is the same for me versus Tiger Woods, but he's playing these higher levels of strategy where he actually sees this variation in setup of a golf course that I don't, because I can't get to them. I can, however, see that in miniature golf.
In miniature golf?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Miniature golf is for the casual player, the person who plays golf 4 to 5 times per lifetime. miniature golf has a lot of variability, and it has variability even in sort of this zero level strategy, right? When I'm playing the clown with the windmill on top of his head that spins and opens and closes his mouth, right? I mean you can put Tiger Woods down there, and he's got to think about the timing. Which he really doesn't have, of the clown's mouth, which is not a normal part of the PGA Tour, and that's a really important strategy. So you're the very most basic strategy in miniature golf can change pretty radically from hole to hole, and while a good golfer might be able to see some interest in variation in a normal game, get themselves into crazy situations in normal games and think about strategy of how to get out of it, for even the lowest level player, I get to feel that in miniature golf. Does miniature golf have more variability than regular golf? Maybe not, but to the beginner it does.
I'm pretty sure on ESPN The Ocho, they're doing PGA players doing miniature golf. I think that's a money idea right there.
I'd watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, and in the space of computer games, a game to think about with this variation in setup is Civilization. Civilization over the years has sort of added to that. In the old days, Civilization, you would begin out and there was a variation in game state, but you didn't see the rest of the world, so it didn't really necessarily change your strategy. You would it would unfold in a similar sense to being dealt a hand of cards in a card game. In Crazy Eights, you don't know what cards are going to come up. But these days, Civilization has it so that the races you play are so radically different. You know, they have these different rules going in that you can say, wow, when we get to the ancient era, I want to save my gold because I get 5% interest, or, you know, it's going to be half price roads during industrial era, so I'm not going to build any roads, or this is a really military race, I'm going to do a lot of, and that's been there to some extent over the years, but it's really important and pronounced these days. So when you sit down, you really have a different you know you're heading for a different game.
Yeah, innovation is such a fun experience in games, and so old school, you know, 1,000 years ago, the way to make sure that there was innovation in your game was just to have a really complex game. And so I know there's going to be innovation in chess if I keep playing chess, and the price I pay for that is a really complex game. And hobby games recently are able to get players to that innovation point not by having a complex game, games that are probably far less complex than chess, but just by sort of hardwiring that game change in the beginning, allowing people to get to those innovation points quickly. And there's cost to that, obviously, but like in the long term, the game may not have the depth of some of these more complex games. It may or it may not, but
and a lot of these games that have hardwired variation in play are able to address their depth in a different way. With Magic in particular, if there's one set of cards, perhaps the depth isn't so great, even though there's a lot of variation to play. You explore that and you're done. But Magic is very appropriate for doing lots of expansions, and then, you know, it's like there's never going to be any end to the challenge it's providing the player. And similarly, all these games, I believe, have that case. Dominion, you can come out with expansion after expansion of cards, which will vary what people are facing.
Yeah, and again, there's costs to all these. Like I think it's relatively inarguable. I mean, Magic is going to have a lot more innovation points in it than say Dominion. But Dominion's pretty nice because you get these variation points with a pay for it for 30 seconds of setup in the beginning, whereas in Magic, you're asking the player to construct a deck. So for someone that doesn't want to spend an hour building a deck, you know, the amount of variation you can get in Dominion for, you know, for a minute's worth of work is you just there's no way to input a minute, you know, into, say, Magic as it first came out.
Yeah, and this is even more true for new trading card games or trading object games, right? They become like Magic. I know Magic. I'm experienced enough to put together decks and so forth. And it's still often a challenge, right? It's like I know it's going to take a lot of effort for me to get to the point where I'm constructing decks. I might sit down and draft. I won't do it well. I'll certainly do sealed deck. And then if I invest a lot of energy, I'll construct a deck. It's like it's a major undertaking. With a new trading card game or trading object game, I have to invest a lot of energy before I'm even capable of getting to that level. But Dominion, you know, is like you just flip up some cards, or Cosmic Encounter, one power, buy a $20 expansion, and you got 20 more powers or 50 more powers.
So talk a little bit about about Spectromancer and how you dealt with this idea of variation and setup.
Spectromancer is an attempt to get some of the variability of a trading card game without the without having to put the time in to construct the deck. So you're not going to get the full amount of variability, but you're also paying, you know, you're getting a hundredth of the variability for a millionth of the time cost or whatever. And we actually got a lot of complaints about that. We got a lot of compliments and a lot of complaints. They're like, why can't I spend 100 hours constructing my deck?
So where can you find Spectromancer?
Is it at www.spectromancer.com?
Okay.
Yeah. The idea of Spectromancer is a not a constructible game, even though it looks like one. It looks superficially like Magic, and so when people sit down, they kind of expect that they should be able to construct their deck, and it doesn't really work for construction. You'd have to really change the basic design, but you do get to choose which of six different races you're going to play, or six different wizards. The mechanician, the necromancer, the cleric, and so forth, and each of those brings its own special spells to the table. And when you begin, you're dealt a random set of spells, which are your spells throughout the entire game. So, depending on the spells you've been dealt, you're going to play in a completely different way than a different game. And then, as your opponent's deal begins unfolding, you'll change your play. So you get a lot of variation in setup. Without a lot of deck construction or military setup or having to drive to a new golf course.
Right. Your deck construction literally is just which character class, so to speak, or which type of mage you want to play. You should choose one of the six and go. When you're playing versus the computer, a lot of the variability comes from the scenario setup, much like in a role-playing game or a military game. And if I wanted to play one of those six wizards, where would I go?
www.spectromancer.com.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. That's right. Very good. Well, on behalf of Scaff Elias.
Bye.
And Richard Garfield.
So long.
I'm Tyler Bielman. This is the Three Donkeys Podcast. Everybody, have a great week. Yeehaw.